Bet the Board in conjunction with NASCAR presents Stay Green. Stay Green is your first stop for all the metrics, matchups, and money-making opportunities at the track each race week. This is Stay Green, the NASCAR betting podcast. Here are your hosts, Todd Furman and racing analyst Chris Wormy.
Welcome into the Stay Green podcast, a Bet the Board production in conjunction with NASCAR. Pocono, the tricky triangle as we head to Long Pond, Pennsylvania this weekend. I am your host, Todd Furman, joined as always by racing analyst Chris Wormy. And Worm, you said it yourself on this very podcast last week, Loudon is one of your favorite tracks on the Cup schedule, and I have to imagine it did not disappoint last Sunday.
No, I thought it went really, really well. I kind of wish Harvick had, you know, kind of taken four tires on that last stop. I think I would like it even more if that were the case. However, I'll take this. Also, it's nice to cash that matchup for sure.
No doubt about it. Kyle Busch made us sweat a little bit. Hopefully all of you, our loyal listeners out there, have been checking out the website on Sundays when we update some of the race day matchups as we have the best information available. And typically, like we've said, the plays that we'll make earlier in the week, smaller positions, and when you have the information at your disposal, you try and beef them up much closer to race day. Also, for those folks new to Stay Green, if this happens to be your first episode, we divide the podcast up. Stage one, we essentially recap the race that was and try and figure out what we learned from the previous installment and apply that going forward. Stage two, we look at some handicapping concepts and try to make all of you smarter NASCAR bettors going forward. And stage three, last, certainly not least, we break down the race for the upcoming weekend. Want to remind all of you guys as well to follow Chris on Twitter. That's at Chris Wormy, ChrisWerme15. I'm Todd Furman. You can follow me there as well. And most importantly, follow the podcast at Bet the Board Pod. And Worm, when we look at the way Loudon played out, you and I talked about Christopher Bell, this being one of his favorite tracks. He went out there and lived up to all expectations, outracing Chase Elliott in that long green flag run of over 100 laps or so. Bell led the final 42 laps of the race. When you're looking at what he was able to do, put more than 5 seconds of distance between him and the nine, as I know you and I were both probably yelling at our respective TVs, Stay Green. The last thing we needed was a caution flag coming on late. Christopher Bell makes the 14th different winner on this Cup schedule so far this season. He's quietly putting together a lot of good runs, and since Dover, his average finish is right around 10th. Meanwhile, a driver that you mentioned, Kevin Harvick, that we were extremely bullish on going in, had a race-winning car, wasn't able to get to the checkered flag, but suddenly with another race winner, him and veteran Martin Truex Jr. find themselves in very perilous positions as far as trying to secure passage to the postseason.
Yeah, this Chris Bell, I mean, he's a great driver. I've been high on Chris Bell for a long time. It's unfortunate that he kind of had to step into the JGR car, squad and kind of boot out Eric Jones, who I also think is a great driver. But I've been high on Chris Bell for a long time. But he's also really hard to know if he's going to be good. I know that we snagged an 18-1 price kind of earlier in the week, not knowing if he was going to be able to repeat the performance that he had last year at Loudon, where he was kind of very similar situation, you know, chasing down Almirola, you know, where he was chasing down Chase this last week. It was funny because I was looking to make live bets and I get a text from a friend of mine that says, do we need to add Bell? And I thought, oh, maybe Bell's going to win. And then I thought to myself, oh, yeah, we already have him. And there was like a 2 to 5 second window when I was like, oh, my gosh, do I not have Chris Bell? And I had completely forgotten that we had bet him earlier in the week. I even texted you after the race. I'm like, you had him, right? And you're like, yeah, you don't remember the conversation that we had. Like, well, I've had a lot of conversations about NASCAR this week. He is such a tough guy to know whether he's going to be good or not. Sometimes I think he's good and he runs, you know, at the tail end of the lead lap. And other times I think he's going to be trash and he runs up front. So I think it's a testament. These younger guys like Briscoe, Bell, they get better throughout the race. I think that they do, you know, the amount that they're able to learn the first half of the race really benefits them late. So I was happy to see Chris Bell win. He looks like he's 14 years old, holding up a lobster that's the same size as himself. So kind of an interesting, it's funny how grossed out people are with the lobsters.
I mean, let's not kid ourselves. That thing isn't just a lobster. I mean, anybody who's gone into a restaurant, you get 1 1/4 pounders. That's a hell of a lot different than picking up a 20 pounder that you're holding there by the claws trying to figure out what the hell is going on. And if memory serves me correct, Christopher Bell is from where? Oklahoma? I don't think there's a lot of lobsters in some of the flyover states in the center of the U.S. But either way, Christopher Bell, he punches his ticket to the NASCAR playoffs, but his teammate, of course, still finds himself needing to do some work before the regular season comes to an end. That, of course, would be Martin Truex Jr., who said the car didn't handle the same once he got shuffled back in traffic. He, of course, took two tires, much like Kevin Harvick, at the final pit stop for them. He ends up leading a race high in laps, and he wins his 6th and 7th stages of the season, which leads the Cup Series. But until you win that race, to know that you're locked into a playoff bid, Martin Truex Jr. continues to have the pressure ratchet up as we go to Pennsylvania and beyond.
I think that this is an ongoing theme in NASCAR. And I don't have a ton of specific races where I can think, but I just looking back at the season, if someone that's led a lot of laps gets shuffled back in traffic, even if it's to like 5th or 6th place, it's amazing how frustrated they become with their car. I mean, clean air is so important with this new car at almost every track that, you know, Martin Truex Jr. is like, I don't need any adjustments all day as he's running up front. The minute he's back and forth, he's like, I don't know what happened. I'm so tight, I can't turn. I can't pass anybody. And this has been kind of just an ongoing theme. And I think it's really important if you're trying to learn and become a better gambler or finding more of an edge, that if someone does get back in traffic, it's just not like the olden days when someone could just drive back to the lead. So that's just one thing that I kind of took away from this race, is this has happened before and it could happen again. So how am I going to prepare myself or prepare my card to make sure that I can cash in or make money on a scenario like this when it happens in the future?
And it's the kind of thing as a driver and a pit crew that you're in a catch-22. You obviously don't want to tinker with a car that has been dominant in clean air all day. You saw the way Truex Jr. was able to get tremendous jump off of the restarts and pull out in front of the field. So you don't want to make some of those adjustments. But to your point, once you start to get shuffled back, you haven't been in that situation all day and you're not quite sure what the car needs, whether it has to be tightened up, whether it's got to be loosened. And I think Martin Truex Jr. said himself that, hey, look, we took two tires. We thought it was the right call. But obviously hindsight's 20/20, wasn't able to get up there and compete with the 9 or the 20 for the checkered flag. But while we're talking about Toyotas, Christopher Bell, of course, race winner, Martin Truex gets his first top five going all the way back to Talladega, which blew me away because it feels like he's in contention week in, week out. There was another Toyota driver that caught our eye in a positive manner.
Well, Bubba Wallace, what an impressive run. I mean, arguably the best run that we've had in NASCAR this year, in my opinion. I mean, if you take away the Trackhouse surprise, I was shocked that Bubba Wallace finished third. And not, it wasn't like he just, oh, by the way, finished in third. I mean, he raced his way up there and was able to hang on and pass fast cars late. I mean, I thought it was a really, really impressive run. The weird thing was kind of that post-race interview and kind of threw his crew under the bus. Like, well, you know, I want to thanks to my team, but they didn't bring a great handling race car, but they brought speed. And I'm like, you just finished third at a place where I didn't think you had a chance in hell at finishing in the top 10. I thought he'd be more excited. So I don't know if that's just kind of the where he's at with that team, but I thought it was just kind of an interesting interview. I thought he'd be much happier, and I thought it was a great run. I'm super impressed. And you know what? It now brings Bubba into the scope of like, hey, can we bet him in the top 3 and top 5 if he looks good in practice?
Yeah, I mean, you talked about that post-race interview, and I think it might be an illustration of exactly some of the, I don't want to say consternation, frustration, animosity that's built up in that 23 race team all season long, but it almost appeared that some of it bubbled over there. So let's see what kind of piece that they unload this weekend in Pocono. We know this is a track where he's actually had a modest level of success in the past. I'm not quite sure how what'll equate to a race-winning car, but at the same time, we'll see if he's able to use that third-place finish, run inside the top 10, and maybe have a chance to finish inside the top 5 for the second straight week. I do want to talk about Chase Elliott, and we'll get there in a second, given the fact that he has put together the most consistent runs over the last 4 weeks. But I guess if we're staying in the Toyota camp, with the sweet comes the sorrow, and for as many good things as we can say about Christopher Bell, Martin Truex Jr., and Bubba Wallace, there was one Toyota driver who thankfully was able to cash, you know, our featured matchup for us. But I think you and I both were a little bit surprised by the ride that the 18 put together, as Kyle Busch looked great in practice, but he was anything but that on race day.
Oh, I mean, this to me was like a tear in the fabric of reality. I mean, I base a lot of what the plays that we make on practice. And man, he has looked good in two races this year in practice, to the point where it's like, well, I think he's a lock to win the race. Not a lock. He is the favorite to win the race. And both times, it's almost like he was driving a different car in the race. At Sonoma, he said, I don't even know if this is the same car. And then to have him spin out twice on his own after, in my opinion, a dominating practice, it was like fastest 5-lap average, 10-lap average, and 15-lap average. I'm just happy I only had him in two matchups, you know, because that would have been a situation where I could have bet him to win every matchup across the board. That's how good he looked in practice. So what? Here's the thing. I want to make sure, and this is why I always like really, really hone in on explanations. I was betting Kyle Busch because I trust him as a driver. He's good at Loudon, and he looked great in practice. And I have to take a look at that explanation and say, is that right, or do I need to adjust that a little bit? So here's my new explanation with Kyle Busch. Kyle Busch is good everywhere, so he's won everywhere, so you can almost throw that away. If he looks good in practice, I am not rushing to bet on him unless he qualifies well, because he's just so damn impatient that he has a hard time working his way through the field. That second spin out, he was underneath Daniel Suarez, clearly faster, but he just could not figure out a way to get by him, and it took him 2 or 3 laps to the point where he's like, well, I'm going to push this to the limit, and I'm either going to make the pass or I'm going to spin out. And I think that was kind of, you know, that's kind of been his season. You know, he gets so frustrated, and his temper kind of boils over to the point where he's like, you know what, I'm going to do this, and if it doesn't work, I don't care. I'm still a great driver. But from a betting standpoint, I have to make sure that I can capitalize on that. So moving forward, even if Kyle looks good in practice, I'm not going to back him unless he qualifies well, because that clean air is just so important with this car.
Well, and you mentioned Kyle Busch. I mean, now it's 5 straight races. 12th place is his best finish in the last 5 races, and that, of course, came this past weekend at Loudon, compared to a stretch where he ran 9 races and he only finished outside the top 10 once, with a 33rd at Darlington. But you mentioned Kyle Busch and impatience, and I feel like it's the perfect segue into one of the biggest storylines that the sport is facing right now. We know what Kyle Busch has accomplished. He's a 60-time winner in the NASCAR Cup Series. His escapades in the Truck Series and Xfinity races are second to none. He's in his 15th season with the 18 team with Joe Gibbs Racing. Meanwhile, he sits in limbo for his 2023 season, but it indicated he's standing pat until the organization officially announces a change in plans. He's been addressing that, and we finally have seen David Wilson of Toyota Racing Development come out and say some things that, hey, they're still working on an amicable solution. They want to try and find a sponsor to keep the 18 there. But what I found surprising is that a driver of this pedigree doesn't have a contract locked in for 2023, and he's also talking to other race teams about the possibility. You never like to play amateur psychologist, but you do wonder if it's win or bust on a week in, week out basis, and some of this off track activity is contributing to some of the frustration we're seeing if the 18 has to race up through the field.
I think that the comments might have been a little more drastic than you put. I mean, he said, we've got some tremendously heavy lifting in front of us. That doesn't sound like two sides that are anywhere close to getting a deal signed. I mean, that to me, I would have been shocked if you'd have told me that Kyle Busch was not going to sign with Gibbs. that's a pretty big comment for David Wilson to make. I'm beginning to wonder if this is kind of boiling over for Kyle Busch. I don't want to like sound the alarm because I still think he's a great driver and I think he wants to race for Gibbs. But man, after his performances the last couple weeks and then you see something like this, man, I don't know. I just don't know. This silly season stuff, I don't pay attention to it as much as other people. But I think that we could see a shakeup. And that's no inside information, by the way. I'm good at betting on the sport. I'm not great at, at like predicting.
We have to help you cultivate. We have to help cultivate your sources behind the scenes as you continue to do this more and more and become fully entrenched in the NASCAR community.
Yeah, well, I'll leave that up to you. You can open up the door for some contacts. I'll just tell you what I think. How's that sound?
Yep, that works. And when one of these race teams wants to have you profile the 18 and figure out what his contract offer should he part ways with JGR at the end of the season, we'll see a logical landing spot. But there's no doubt a driver that has accomplished as much on the track as Kyle Busch has isn't going to run to another racing team where he doesn't think he can win week in, week out. So clearly a storyline that we're going to be keeping tabs on throughout the rest of the regular season and obviously until a decision is made for Kyle Busch to remain in the 18 car at JGR or to officially announce that he's exploring some of his other options and be removed from his contract that comes up at the end of the 2022 season. A driver, though, Wormy, that's not going to be looking for a new home anytime soon. I think he signed pretty much a lifetime deal with Hendrick Motorsports, would be Chase Elliott. We talked about him staying hot, yet another top two finish, the fourth in as many weeks. Again, he had a chance to control a race late, but burned off his rear. Didn't drive the best over the final 25 to 30 laps, or the equivalent of what we saw in Road America, getting passed by one of the younger and upcoming drivers there. But what I found interesting is the way that the telecast goes about approaching Chase Elliott's aggressive driving style versus the way they approach Ross Chastain if he were to use similar maneuvers to drive through the field.
Yeah, golden boy Elliott here, he gets off pretty easy. And I just, listen, he's a great driver, and he's got a great car and a great team, and I think he has probably the best spotter in Eddie DeHaan. I mean, by the way, shout out to Eddie DeHaan and Justin Allgaier. If you're ever having a bad day and you're watching the Xfinity race, turn on those two and listen to how they communicate with each other. I mean, you'll become a better communicator with your wife after listening to those two. They're so nice. They're so cordial. I feel so at ease listening to him. But anyway, back to Chase. I've been wrong about Chase. I was the first person to say I don't expect as much from Chase. I thought that his great finishes, they were more of a product of his, of the tracks, not his car. And man, I think, I'm correct me if I'm wrong, I'm pretty sure he went to the rear at one point in this race and he worked his way back up to the front. I mean,
oh yeah, he was slicing and dicing. I mean, that was what you'd expect from a Cup driver going down to the Xfinity Series in superior equipment. The way he was able to take himself from the tail end of the lead lap and essentially picked up what felt like 15 to 17 positions inside of 20 to 25 laps.
Yeah, and you know what? He raced well. I have to hand it to him. It was kind of interesting. You know, I was listening to Chris Bell's radio and his spotters listing off lap times and, hey, you're going to get him. And finally, Chris Bell just says, I got it. And then the crew chief comes on and says something to his spotter. I don't know the spotter's names. I apologize. But he just goes, yeah, maybe just let him go. And at that point, I was like, wow, Chris Bell has this race covered. But Chase, you kind of have to make Chase the favorite for the championship at this point, in my opinion. And I know that sounds like, oh, well, no kidding. But he really has put some speed together. He runs well at Phoenix. And momentum's a thing in NASCAR. And he's got a lot of it going, even though he doesn't show a lot of speed early in the race. Man, is he there at the end and when that matters.
Yeah, and I mean, we've seen it before from the 9 car. They typically peak during the playoffs, and that's when they put their best races together. The season right now and the way he's running at tracks where we don't have such high expectations for him is almost beginning to remind me of what we saw from the 5. You come out of the summer schedule, you start to pick things up, you're constantly running inside the top 5. Good things are going to happen, and to your point, there's a reason that Chase Elliott finds himself as a 3.5 or 4-1 favorite, depending on which shop you're looking at, to win the championship this season. We'll wave the white flag with one to go in stage one. Of course, one other major announcement came from NASCAR this week, and I wanted to get your take on exactly how you think this will translate to the on-track product we'll see. Road America will not be on the schedule in 2023. Instead, we're going to get the first street circuit in NASCAR's 74-year history. July 1st and 2nd, they're going to head to my hometown of Chicago. Brings in a major media market with an iconic backdrop. Of course, you and I have missed the racing from Chicagoland Speedway, as that was one of our favorite tracks to bet. But you're talking about Grant Park, Buckingham Fountain, Lakeshore Drive, Soldier Field, all of those other iconic images that come with Chicago. But I have to ask this question of you, Chris. Are we worried that this is going to feel like F1 going to Monaco or some of the IndyCar races that we've seen on street circuits where it's extremely difficult to pass? And while it looks great from an aesthetic standpoint, it doesn't always lend itself to the best racing.
Yeah, I mean, first of all, RIP to Chicagoland. I mean, I thought that was a great track. I actually watched David Rudiman run down Carl Edwards to win that race one year. Yep, there's a little blast from the past. But I always thought that the racing it in Joliet was awesome. I do applaud NASCAR for taking stabs at trying new things. I think that they're probably the most innovative professional sport when it comes to they're willing to take a risk, and I applaud them. I just want to make sure that they don't get too caught up in something that might not be a great production. Like, hey, let's test this out. Let's see how it works. And if it works really well, let's do it again. It's kind of a bummer that Road America is not going to be on the schedule, because I did think that they provided great racing. When it comes to tracks like Monaco, a big part of the reason is, and I'm not an expert on road courses, especially like street courses, but Monaco is so narrow. That's what makes it tough to pass. And I think NASCAR did a good job making the track wide enough to make sure that there's, I don't know if there's going to be multiple grooves, but there's at least enough room to pass. And I think that Chicago will be a great venue, obviously, in the summer. It's, you know, right on Lake Michigan. It's going to be a great venue. I just want to make sure that everyone knows this is not just NASCAR that's going out on the limb here. Goodyear has to give a tire that's going to provide great racing. You know, they have a symbiotic relationship. And, you know, if I could, you know, plant a seed in Goodyear's ear, I think that fall off is going to be really, really important to having a race where you see comers and goers, guys that are good on the short run versus the long run, and provide the racing that fans want to see, not only live, but on TV. So that would be the one thing that I'm a little concerned about is, you know, and I know Goodyear has to be super cautious. They can't just bring a tire that, you know, where they could have issues, and then that opens up a whole new bag of worms. But I think if they could actually find something that falls off a little bit on these road courses, and I don't know, they're going to be going from asphalt to concrete, I'd imagine. I'm not saying it's easy, but if any fall off at all would be awesome to see.
Yeah, I'm definitely curious because, I mean, you can do a ton through simulations, and there's no doubt the technology behind a lot of this is far advanced from where we would have been in the sport 5, 7, 15, 20 years ago, obviously. But the first time these guys will get out there and truly be able to race will be when they go into race setup, and the city of Chicago shuts down a lot of their main thoroughfares, so it'll be a learning experience for everybody involved. And I think it was interesting, I want to say it was on NASCAR Spaces on Wednesday afternoon, where I heard Austin Cindric talking about how important practice will be, as guys are going to have to push the car to the limit to know what they're able to do when you're going into this type of venue that nobody has raced on previously, and it's going to provide some unique quirks and nuances. I will say, as far as the street circuit that we're going to see in Chicago, I got to give a shout out to one of the best Twitter accounts in all of NASCAR for NASCARchasm, with the Ferris Bueller reference, where you see anyone who, I don't know if you happen to see it on his feed earlier. Outstanding. Encourage you to check it out. It's a scene from Ferris Bueller where they're standing in the museum and he's just staring at the race map, and it goes on for 30 seconds, fully entrenched in the map. So I love the creativity of the NASCAR community. And obviously we're all looking forward to this race being a tremendous success as we bring in America's birthday next year, right around the 4th of July. On to stage two we go, Worm, and I want to remind all the folks out there, you can follow Chris on Twitter. That's at Chris Wermy, ChrisWerme15. I'm Todd Furman. You can follow me there as well. You can also follow the podcast at Bet the Board Pod. Stage two, We get into some of the breakdowns for the terminology, some of the betting markets that are available. I know a lot of people have reached out when we issue some of these matchups and say, well, we can't find this matchup. The NASCAR market is a little bit different than what you've grown accustomed to for some of the stick and ball sports in a variety of ways. Some books offer head-to-heads. Some books offer different head-to-heads. Other shops with their win their outright markets, top threes, top fives, top tens. But you brought up an interesting term, one that doesn't get thrown around all the time, especially in NASCAR betting communities, and it was price elasticity for various drivers. Rather than try and steer you one way or another, I'm going to open up the floor and let you take this particular topic any way your little heart desires.
Yeah, this is a conversation that I had with Derek. He's at Picks by Blaze on Twitter. And we were kind of discussing some of the live bets we had made during the race at Loudon. And he said that he had not bet Kyle Larson. And he explained why. And we had had this conversation before the race that, you know, over long runs and races that have fall off where there's not a high line, like let's just say Homestead, Larson tends to struggle. But I did bet Kyle Larson live. I didn't bet much. But if Kyle Larson looks good, his price drops and it never comes up. So when I say elasticity, it's basically how flexible their price is relative to how many people are betting it. It's an economic term. It's usually price elasticity of demand. But for this, I'm just talking about if Kyle Larson looks good, you better get him right away because his price will never go back up to 11-1. So I can't remember the exact lap in which I bet Kyle Larson, but I did take him at 11-1. And the reason I did that is because he was up four spots. He had just, I think, got into fourth or fifth place. And when Kyle Larson looks good, his odds plummet instantly. If you compare that with someone like, let's just say Kevin Harvick, another guy that we were invested in that race that we thought was going to be good, he was also up five spots, but his price had not moved. So shortly after I had bet Kyle Larson at 11-1, he had not passed anybody else, but apparently the books had now taken notice. Hey, Kyle Larson looks good. They immediately moved him to 5-1, and they never raised him much above 6 or 7-1. So if you wanted Kyle Larson or someone like Kyle Busch, or I think Martin Truex you could kind of see in there, maybe Denny Hamlin, maybe Ross Chastain, make sure that you're always getting that best number. But for sure, if you want Kyle Larson, he looks good early. Nibble on him at that price because you might not see him reach that price ever again. So that's kind of why I wanted to bring it up. I know that a lot of guys, you know, if you're watching the race, I mean, live betting is so much fun. I know you're at a little bit of a disadvantage there in Vegas, but
we still do not have live betting at our disposal in lovely Nevada. And as much as I would like to watch races on my phone from the Hoover Dam every Saturday and Sunday, I'm not quite sure that's a feasible alternative.
Well, that's too bad because I know I enjoy it. And you know what? I know you'd enjoy it too.
They, you know, when you talk about live betting and you go in, and obviously everybody who's listening to this, that's not that familiar, but they've come a long way in just a couple of episodes listening alongside us break things down. Do you set up your live bankroll differently than you do some of your head-to-head matchups, your pre-race outrights and everything else? Or is it all on a case-by-case? Hey, look, I think this race is going to offer some opportunity. I'm willing to fire over the top. I know limits can be a little bit restrictive for, you know, some of the amounts that you're putting in play. But if you're offering advice to someone who hasn't done this before, what's a good place for them to try and develop that learning curve as it pertains to betting live NASCAR and not becoming a prisoner of the moment looking to bet a guy who's out in clean air and looks like they have the fastest car?
Oh, I would say it's very track dependent. I'll get more into that when we talk about Pocono because I think it applies perfectly this week. But I think the biggest thing, the biggest piece of advice I could give someone that wants to live bet is you have to make sure that the car that you're betting on is able to make passes. If the car that you're looking to live bet hasn't really made many passes, but they've kind of worked their way up the field, that might be more based on strategy. And listen, you might win bets based on strategy. I'm not saying that's the case, but when I'm looking at a driver that I'd like to invest in or make a position or take a position on when it comes to live betting, I want to make sure that they're making passes. They don't need to make a ton of passes, but they do need to at least show that their car can move up under green flag conditions.
Hey, it's good advice. I mean, especially with the next-gen cars that we've seen, if you can't make passes, it's not fair to rely on strategy, two-tire stops, or hoping that some of your closest competition are going to have 18-second pit stops when you need it most. So you'd like to have the fastest piece on track, and it'll create some opportunities. But again, a friendly reminder why you always want to have a number of books at your disposal to be able to get the best number, because the live markets, just like pre-race stuff, can be very different from shop to shop. As we always do in stage two, before we close the book here, I want to remind you where you can watch all of your NASCAR action this weekend, and things will kick off in earnest as all three series are on the track. 4:30 Eastern, the NASCAR Camping World Truck Series practice qualifying at Pocono Raceway can be seen on FS1. Saturday morning, bright and early for those of us out here on the West Coast. 9:30 Eastern, we'll see the Xfinity Series practice and qualifying on USA. We'll see the trucks get on track for the Bracklin 150 at Pocono Raceway at 9 in the morning, or 12 o'clock Eastern. 2:30 Eastern time, the big boys are on track for Cup Series practice and qualifying from Pocono. That's available on USA. And your last on-track activities for Saturday will be the Xfinity Series race, Explore the Pocono Mountains 225, and that, weather permitting, will go at 5 Eastern. And the culminating event for the entire weekend from Long Pond, Pennsylvania, the Cup Series, they'll drop the green flag at 3 o'clock Eastern. And as we know, Worm, we can only hope that Mother Nature complies. Pocono, much like Loudoun, not always our favorite when it comes to weather interventions and Monday finishes. But on to the race itself for Stage 3. And when you're looking at Pocono, I think folks new to the sport, you're going to hear this term plenty all weekend long, and that is calling it the Tricky Triangle. The 2.5-mile trioval boasts the longest front stretch in all of motorsports. Three very separate turns. I'll let you watch the broadcast as they'll describe which turn goes with which historically, you know, relevant track that's out there. First turn, radius 675 feet, 14 degrees of banking, back straightaway over 3,000 feet in length. Second turn, radius of 750 feet with 8 degrees of banking. A short straightaway has a length of just under 2,000 feet. And the final turn, 800 feet as far as a turn radius with 6 degrees of banking. The main straightaway over 3,700 feet in length. And the racing surface will be 60 to 100 feet wide everywhere around. When you're looking at some of the previous winners at this track, Kyle Busch won one of the two races. It was part of a back-to-back series on the 2021 schedule. Alex Bowman won the first race. Denny Hamlin before that, Kevin Harvick, Denny Hamlin again, Kyle Busch, Martin Truex Jr. Denny Hamlin's six wins at Pocono tie him with Jeff Gordon for the best all-time. And Worm, you kind of alluded to it when we talked about live betting, how Pocono can provide very different opportunities, but at the same time, challenges for live bettors. But it can do that even pre-race, knowing that we're going to see a variety of different strategies on full display this Sunday.
Correct. The reason that you find this track to have more strategy than all of the other ones that we'll see, with the exception of road courses, is because you're able to pit and take four tires and not lose a lap. So if you think about that, you're going to see a lot of people take this road course mentality where they maybe undercut the stage. They'll pit with three to go right before the stage ends, and then they'll get their service, their fuel. And that way, once the caution flag waves, instead of pitting and taking tires with everyone else, they will already have had that service and they will cycle around to the front. And that's a great way to get track position. So when I say that this is a strategy race, I would say that more even than road courses, because I think that cars that are fast on road courses are able to make up more positions on track under green flag conditions than they are here at Pocono. So I think that this is the most strategy laden race, and make sure that you're watching and paying attention and knowing who is on the front end of different strategies that will help you when it comes to making your live bets.
Hey, it's what's going to drive people nuts, and you'll hear it at the end when you get the waving of the white flag with one to go, how many cars are saving fuel, how many are hoping against NASCAR overtime. It'll be a sweat unlike most NASCAR sweats each and every weekend. But when you're looking at the odds board for this coming race at Pocono, we're looking at Kyle Busch as the favorite, depending on the shop, anywhere from a low of 6-1 upwards of 8-1. But it's a logjam. Kyle Busch, Kyle Larson, Denny Hamlin, Chase Elliott, all kind of in that same grouping. The second tier of drivers, all priced from a low of 10-1 upwards of 14-1, include Ryan Blaney, Ross Chastain, who we did see some major movement at one book from where he opened earlier this week.
Whoops.
Martin Truex Jr., Kevin Harvick, William Byron, Joey Logano, Christopher Bell. And that's when you get into that next tier highlighted by Kurt Busch, Alex Bowman, Tyler Reddick, Bubba Wallace, and Chase Briscoe to a certain extent. Daniel Suarez thrown in there as well. And I guess given all the attention we paid to JGR at the top of the show and what we saw from those cars last weekend in New Hampshire, it provides a logical starting point for us this weekend. You touched a little bit on Kyle Busch. We know he had a rocket ship both races last year at this track. Denny Hamlin, he's had a ton of past success here. Christopher Bell, the pressure's off him in terms of winning a race. Martin Truex is still there. When you're looking at JGR, suffice to say that you feel all four of these drivers are going to factor in potentially a race-winning automobile this weekend?
Yeah, I would say so. I wouldn't be shocked if any of those four drivers won the race. I think that when you look at last year in Kyle Busch's success, he was coming in with much more momentum from a speed standpoint than he is this week. I think that it's crazy that I once heard from a professional golfer that you can always bet against a professional golfer that has something else going on in the background of their life. And I feel like Kyle Busch kind of has that right now, and everything has become magnified. And I'm not saying Kyle Busch isn't going to be great this week, but I still need to see something from him before I'm going to back him at 7-1, even though I know he opened like plus 450 on DraftKings, but he has slowly worked his way up to now 8-1 almost everywhere. I'm not rushing to back him. I'd rather see a little bit. You know, Denny's success was a little bit more, you know, early on in his career. I think that he struggled a little bit more with, you know, recent aero packages when it comes to this track. When it comes to Bell, like I said, he's a coin toss, you know, every week. You know, if you get Chris Bell at over, you know, 18-1 or better, you just kind of bet him. Just because you never know if he's going to be great like he was last week or he's going to disappear like he has at other tracks. This is a good track for Truex, and I think he's showing speed and a little bit of confidence. But then again, you know, he got mired back in traffic and wasn't able to work his way up through the field. So, like I said, all of those four drivers, I could see winning this race. It's a matter of, you know, what car is in the right position to get on the right strategy. And sometimes it's a bad car. Let me say that again. Sometimes if your car is not that good, you're willing to take more of a risk and maybe hope for a caution and actually benefit from having a poor car and get track position. Whereas good cars, they might stay on the track a little bit longer and they could actually, you know, not benefit from having a great car because of a caution after a few guys have pitted. They would then cycle kind of behind them and lose track position. So, man, I think this is a really, really tough week to say, hey, this is what I think is going to happen. I think it's more important to just kind of watch and see how things play out in practice and then maybe dabble on some outrights in some matchups. I will definitely be lighter on from an outright perspective this week going into the race than I was last week.
It's interesting because I'm poking around on a couple books, pulled up FanDuel right now as well. Kyle Busch 7-1, pretty much across the board, and a lot of the same drivers similarly priced. We don't see nearly as much variance for this weekend as what we saw widely available for last week. And I know when we recorded on Wednesday, we talked about Kevin Harvick coming down to 15, had one shop out here in the desert open as high as 25-1, gobbled up a little bit of that, but unfortunately, even the best number, unable to get me to the window. HMS has been a very interesting team to watch. We've talked about Chase Elliott, and rightfully so, plenty over the last couple of weeks. We know how good he has been week in, week out. It hasn't mattered on the track. He's never won here, though, at Pocono, and he's finished outside the top 10 in four or five races. Last year, it was more some contact that shuffled him back and actually ruined his day. You look at Kyle Larson. If we go back to Richmond, his average finish is just outside the top 10. If we back out the 36th place finish at Darlington. He's been inside the top nine. So still a model of consistency. And for all the things we want to say about where are the wins for the five so far this year, he does have eight top fives, has him second in the Cup Series behind only Ross Chastain. And he's actually run exceptionally well here, showing consistent speed regardless of the equipment he's in, even before he was a member of HMS. Then there are their two other teammates in William Byron and Alex Bowman, who have shown nothing but struggles, and struggles may not be a strong enough word. William Byron, just one top 10 finish in his last 12 races after he started out the season white hot. Alex Bowman, meanwhile, three DNFs in his last four races. Has it surprised you that you're seeing such a disparity in what we're seeing from the 9 and the 5 compared to the 24 and the 48?
Yeah, I'm a little shocked, like without a doubt. And I think it's important, you know, watching last year's races, you know, you want to make sure that there's an apples to apples comparison, because I know that there's a lot of people talking about Kyle Larson. Oh, this is great value on him this week. And listen, you're never going to get an argument from me when you see Kyle Larson at 8-1 or better and say, oh, I think there's value, because there could be. Let me say that again. There could be value on Kyle Larson. However, if you watch that first race last year, now it was really unfortunate he didn't win, you know, blowing a tire coming off of, you know, basically the final turn. I want to go back and look at what happened and how he got there. Alex Bowman on strategy with two tires had the lead with however many laps to go. I don't know, maybe it was 20. But it took Kyle Larson 11 laps with four tires to actually run down Bowman, which was shockingly long to me. Now, under normal circumstances like this year, that would make sense. But remember last year how dominant Kyle Larson was. We're not talking about just an average car. We're talking about the best car and arguably the best season that any driver in any NASCAR season's ever had. And it took him 11 laps with two more fresh tires. So I'm not going to rush to bet Kyle Larson this week, just because there's something about this track and the aero. I would way rather watch these cars in practice, see if they're able to pass before I'm, you know, going to go make any play on anyone, including Kyle Larson. When it comes to this Byron Bowman, I mean, I think that they're both obviously.
There's got to be value somewhere. Now, hold on a second. I don't want to cut you off, but I will for a second. I don't want to encourage anybody to run and bet them now, but I also want to discourage folks from blindly betting against them, given their current.
Absolutely. Form. Yeah. Here's the thing. If Byron unloads well, he'll be fast and be in the race and probably be a single digit favorite to win the race. Bowman, on the other hand, I don't think you won't see him be a single digit favorite. Where Bowman is good where Bowman is undervalued, let me say that, is when he looks average in practice. Bowman gets a lot out of an average car. Byron doesn't get as much out of an average car, but he tends to unload better. So if Byron unloads, he'll be in the mix. If Bowman unloads and he's average, he could be in the mix. He's done a great job of getting, I would say, better than average finishes for the kind of car that he's had. It is interesting kind of how much better the 9 has been than all three of those other cars. And I don't know, you know, that's one of the things in NASCAR that we just don't know about. When one team or one driver on a team is running well and the other ones are struggling, I don't know why that may be, but right now it's obvious that the 9 car is by far the fastest in that camp.
Yeah, it's definitely different when that kind of thing happens in NASCAR, because there's a lot more collaboration. Teams aren't siloed. Well, they are siloed more in that they're all incentivized to win, unlike folks who tune in and watch F1 on Saturdays and Sundays, where teams go in and they know which driver they want to finish ahead of their teammate, and they do everything possible to try and make that happen. There's none of that that goes on in NASCAR. They'll share notes, they'll try and figure out setups, but once every driver's out on the track, it's every man for himself to try and go out there and get the checkered flag. Well, when we talk about Bowman and Byron struggling, Team Penske struggled from top to bottom. It was Austin Cindric with the best finish of that race team last weekend in New Hampshire, coming in 13th. We saw Ryan Blaney finish 18th and Joey Logano finish off the lead lap as well. Jurek tried a strategy play twice, didn't quite work out as he had a pit, much to our benefit, with 8 laps to go, coming in 24th. How do you approach Team Penske this weekend? We see prices on Joey Logano and Ryan Blaney that, at least on the surface, may appear to be slightly more compelling. And we've seen Ryan Blaney bring speed, but you brought it up a few weeks ago. When he gets shuffled back in traffic, that 12 car hasn't been the same.
If he doesn't look good in practice, I mean, Blaney, if you look at his practice, I think that you're able to see the kind of car in kind of the running position he's going to have. He was pedestrian in practice at a track where the comparables in Phoenix and Richmond, he was very, very fast. And that's the car he had. And kind of the opposite of Kyle Busch, you know, Blaney, you know, he had what he had and we knew it. Where Kyle Busch, it was like he looked great and then he was trash. So I was really shocked at how bad Blaney was. You know, I was kind of bummed out that I had Kyle and, you know, I had Kyle in against Logano, and that was the pick of the day. And also we faded Blaney. So I was happy with that Blaney wasn't very good. Where I was wrong is Logano was a little bit better than I thought. The reason I give Logano a little bit of an edge this week is his crew chief. I think Paul Wolf gets the most out of strategy than anyone else. Now, I kind of, you know, had a tweet that aged poorly because obviously I said Paul Wolf is like the equivalent of a professional gambler and a crew chief. And the first time that he stayed out, he got the caution. He stole, you know, 7 or 8 spots of track position. And I was like, man, I wish that the guys I bet on did that. Now, fast forward to the end of the race, Logano stays out. He can't make it on fuel. He pits and we're able to win the matchup. So with that being said, I was wrong about the fact that Paul Wolf is right more often than he's wrong, because last week that was able to, you know, help us cash a ticket. The one thing where I think that, you know, drivers, you know, and crew chiefs and anyone looking to bet live, you need to make sure that when drivers are undercutting the stage, and when I say undercut, that means pitting with 3 to go and getting their service, so that way they don't have to come down pit road under caution once the stage ends. Last year, two drivers, or two teams, I guess you could say, got this wrong. Chris Bell lost a lap. Like, that can't happen, because even though he was a lucky dog, he has to start at the tail end of the longest line. So it happened to Chris Bell in race one, and then in race two, it happened to William Byron. But Byron was close enough. He was able to repass. I can't remember who was leading at the time. It might have been Kyle Busch. He was able to repass Kyle Busch and actually get his lap back. That's really important for track position. It doesn't matter for position, like on the track, whether he's, let's just say, 21st or 22nd. That doesn't matter. It matters because if you're the lucky dog, you still start at the tail end of the longest line, which means you're going to have to pass lap down cars that actually don't pull over for you. So these drivers, or these crew chiefs, I might say, they know exactly how many seconds behind the leader they need to be in order to pit under green and not lose a lap. If they make that mistake, it's costly. It literally erases every advantage they would have had by pitting and undercutting the stage. So although I like Paul Wolf's aggressiveness, he needs to be careful, because if you make a little bit of a mistake like he did last week at Loudon, I mean, I thought that there was going to be a caution as well, so I would have done the same thing. But you have to be careful, because it is kind of this double-edged sword when you're super aggressive with strategy.
Yeah, I mean, the 22 was able to run from, you know, north of lap 100 with remaining in there and get 90-plus laps there. So you think more often than not there's going to be one caution flag. You know, when you have a win in your back pocket, that's a luxury that you're afforded. You can gamble to try and win a race and pick up a few extra points. He, of course, finds it to be a little bit costly when he gets shuffled all the way back outside the top 20. And it's something that we talked about a couple weeks ago at Road America. The reason that you can do things on tracks like this is, to your point, that you're not going to lose a lap if you pit off cycle with everybody else. If there's enough time for the lap, you can get back out there and put yourself in position. But I did want to follow up one thing, a term you use here that NASCAR fans know all too well, but there are plenty of folks who may be tuning into their first race this weekend. The lucky dog. Can you explain exactly what that is, Worm, to some folks who may not watch NASCAR on a week-in, week-out basis?
Yeah, so the lucky dog is the first car a lap down. Now, I'm not sure of the rule. Like, I think the leaders have to pit in order for them to get the official lucky dog. Essentially, they get a free pit stop, and they get their lap back. And that's just great, because you can come down, you can get your service, and you're able to get your lap back. So that's the first car a lap down, which is also why you see lap or cars that are on the tail end of the lead lap race the leader so hard. So whenever you have the leader, and let's just say they have a 2 second lead, and you're like, oh man, this guy just, you know, Truex is running away with it. Well, you got to remember that he has guys that are trying to fight for track position that are trying to hold him off. And let me tell you, if you've only been watching this series for 1 year, you haven't seen Ryan Newman try to stay on the lead lap. I mean, this guy was almost impossible to pass. He could be 21st place, and if he was the last car on the lead lap, it was like passing, you know, Dale Sr. I mean, you just couldn't do it. He was almost impossible, and he held that persona his entire career. And you know what? It almost cost Kyle Busch a race at Chicago when Kyle Larson was kind of ripping the high line. And then, you know, so those things are really important to understand when betting, you know, at least understanding how the live markets work. But that lucky dog is obviously something that you can use to your advantage. And, it helps drivers that maybe had a penalty and they go a lap down, they can get back on the lead lap if they're that lucky dog, which is why you see competitive racing at the tail end of the field.
Yeah, it's definitely things to look for, and as you continue to watch more and more races, it'll be the kind of things that you pick up on, that there isn't always just a race at the front of the field. There can be races throughout the course of the lead lap to try and maintain position. One final race team that I wanted to pick your brain on for two drivers that I think will have an excellent chance to be relevant this weekend would, of course, be Trackhouse. We've seen Ross Chastain with good equipment all season long fare exceptionally well. He did get a win here in the Truck Series back in 2019 and was runner-up in the Xfinity Series in 2020. If you're looking at some of his Cup results, you can throw those out the window. He was racing in inferior equipment, so they're not going to have any relevance to how he's going to run this weekend. And his teammate Daniel Suarez, last five races, an average finish just outside the top seven, four top 10 finishes in the last five races. We're seeing the 1 and the 99 bring speed week in, week out.
Yeah, I think Chastain's one of those guys that if you see him at a certain price, you'll never get an argument from me if you bet him. And, you know, there was a shop that opened him at 20-1, and man, 3 minutes later, it was 15-1, and now he's 10-1. So there were definitely some people that were able to get in on Chastain at that early price. I don't think that there's any.
I would not be one of those individuals, for the record.
I wonder who did. Anyway, I would say I would say Chastain is probably properly priced right now at that, you know, I would say anywhere from 8-10-1, I feel like, is where you can see Ross. Suarez is another, you know, he can be an enigma. He's kind of, I've had a hard time winning betting on him or betting against him. Sometimes when I think he's going to be good, he's not. And other times when I think he's going to be bad, he's good. So I do know when he was in the Gibbs equipment, he did have some good finishes here at Pocono. But I also think that it was a little bit easier to pass. So I think that, you know, qualifying is going to be super important for this team. Otherwise, they're going to have to take a little bit more risk than other teams in order to get that track position and kind of ensure that he can get a good finish. So I obviously like Chastain a little bit more than Suarez. But I think with where prices are, I actually like that Suarez at 30, you know, maybe not the win price, but that top five price at 4-1. I like that a lot more than I like the Chastain, you know, top five price, which is probably right around +130 to +150.
You can think a car is fast, but it's all about the number. You can love a driver at 20-1 and want no part of him at 8-1 or 10-1. That's part of the beauty that comes not only in NASCAR, but sports betting in general. An in-depth Pocono breakdown of some of the drivers to watch this weekend. As always, if there's a matchup that catches our eye, we'll have that best bet available for you on the Bet the Board website. We'll tweet out a link. It'll come from our feeds and want you guys to be able to get down on that, because we've talked about at great lengths, once we have a lot more information at our disposal, it allows for us to make much more informed decisions, and the positions we take on race day significantly larger than what we'll typically take earlier in the week. The reason I give you all of that is to ask you this question, Mr. Worm. The Cup Series can be a little bit challenging sometimes when you try and find some value. I have an inkling, obviously, because we talked beforehand, so I'm not going to claim that I had no knowledge, that we're not going to the Cup Series this weekend to try and find our best bet for Pocono Race Weekend.
Nope. We are looking no further than the Xfinity Series this week for the best bet. And my best bet of the week is going to be Cole Custer at plus 550 or better to win the Xfinity race. Now, hear me out. I think Cole Custer might be one of the best Xfinity series drivers that there is right now. I know that everyone's like, well, how can you say that? He's only run a few times. Listen, he runs an 07 car that's not competitive unless he's in it. I understand that they have an alliance with SHR when he's in it. However, he goes out there and he competes. Let me tell you about his pit crew. I think his pit crew consists of like two accountants, an insurance salesman, and then like a grocery store clerk. I mean, their pit stops are terrible. And he's going to lose four or five spots every time. But at this track, you can make up four or five spots in a hurry. And I think that, you know, a lot of people are saying he might not have the horsepower, you know, under the hood in order to win this race. But I think it's less about horsepower and more about the run you get off the corner. When you're coming on that long pond straightaway, which is, you know, the longest straightaway we see in racing, it's more about how quickly you get to the gas off the corner versus the horsepower underneath the hood. So I'm going to say that the best bet is Cole Custer, plus 550 or better. I've seen anywhere from plus 550 to 8-1. I think that's the best bet of the day. If you're going to protect, maybe protect with a little bit of that Ty Gibbs guy. I heard he's good at driving too, and he's in a fast car. But for the most part, you know, my best bet is Cole Custer this week. And then tune in on Sunday morning. I will be giving the best bet. I don't want to brag, but we're 3-0 on those bets so far this year.
Yeah, let's hope we can continue that hot hand there. And like always on Sunday morning, we'll tweet that out when it's updated on the website. Encourage folks to check it out. And we always look to try and wait until most of the books are up in the market to give you guys an opportunity to take that matchup alongside of us. Pocono weekend, always a little bit of fun when Mother Nature complies. It's great anytime you get a race weekend with all three series in action. A little double dip on Saturday with the truck race, the Xfinity series, and a little bit of cup qualifying and practice sandwiched in there. The cup race on Sunday, and we'll hope that we keep our hot hand here on Stay Green. Any final words of wisdom, parting shots, things that you would like to share with our racing audience before we bid them a fond farewell?
Well, I think that it's just important to know that there are some tracks that are better than others from a gambling perspective. And early in the week, this is just one track where I'd rather kind of let the week come to us and then see what kind of value presents itself after practice and qualifying and not get too tied up in opinions early in the week. So although I do love this track, I think the racing's great. I'm a little bit hesitant to be, you know, super involved at this point in the week at this track.
Makes a ton of sense. Discretion can be the better part of valor. It's a mantra that all sports bettors live by. Encourage all of you, if you're not already doing so, to follow Chris on Twitter. That's Chris Wermy, ChrisWerme15. I'm Todd Furman. You can follow me there as well. And the podcast at Bet the Board Pod for Sunday's best bet. Best of luck with all of your racing investments. And with a Cole Custer outright ticket in hand for the Xfinity race on Saturday, hopefully we'll see you. The window.
Stay green, baby.